All right, what's up, D-Town? Man, love the energy. Hey, if we haven't met yet, my name is Will McElroy. I get to serve with the Shoreline team, and I love it. These last 2 years have been two of the best years of my life. It is so fun just pouring into the next generation of the church, of God's people. And so I'm excited for this time, for the next 30 minutes. We're going to be looking at Hebrews 12. We're going to be looking at just two verses in Hebrews 12, verses 1 and 2. So if you have your Bible, you can go ahead and turn there. But while you're turning there, I wanted to start out with the story. And this story, it happened Monday. So like just this past week, Monday. And I was going to Bucky's with two friends of mine. We were driving up to Bucky's, which the Bucky's here is about, 30, 45 minutes north in this town called Melissa. And so we were going to Bucky's to get some things for D-Town, get some snacks and just some fun things for D-Town. And we're driving to Bucky's. We get our stuff, and then we head back to Dallas, right? And it's a, you know, we're road tripping it, having good conversation, just being intentional, chatting with each other. And we're driving back to Dallas. And I just start noticing after about 30, 45 minutes, I'm like, man, there's a lot more farms that I remember there being in Dallas. Like, and we keep driving, we keep going, and I'm like, there's some old houses. Like, these are small towns. Like, where's the skyscrapers? Where's the high rises and the highways? Like, where are we at? And we made, I don't know if you know where Short Sherman is, but it's at the border of Oklahoma. And we made it almost to Oklahoma before me and these guys were like, we have been going the wrong way for the last hour. And so what was supposed to be an hour and a half round trip turned into a three and a half hour round trip. And I start that story because I think our spiritual lives are kind of the same way. See, I meet with guys pretty often, and something that comes up a lot of time is people tell me, they say, man, I'm trying to pursue Christ, but then I feel like I drift off for a week or two, and then I come back in and I start getting back into God's word, start studying his word, and then another couple weeks I drift off. And I think in the same way, when I made that wrong turn out of Bucky's, I was like, how true is this for my life, my walk with Christ, where it's just so easy to make a wrong turn? And look, there's nothing wrong with going to Oklahoma, right? There's nothing wrong with Oklahoma, but there's something wrong with it when I was trying to get back home. Like, that wasn't my goal, to go to Oklahoma. And so that distraction, it cost me. It cost me. And so today, we're going to be looking at a passage in Hebrews 12 where the author is saying, hey, this Christian life, pursuing Jesus, it's like running a race. It's like running a race. And you don't, when you're running a race, you don't want anything to slow you down when you're running a race. You don't want there to be any distractions when you're running a race. Otherwise, it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you and slow you down from pursuing what matters, which is Christ. And so, we're going to look at Hebrews 12, verses 1 and 2. Just two verses. And I'm going to go ahead and read the passage and then kind of give you an outline of where we're going to go with the message. Okay, so let's look at Hebrews 12. I'm reading from the ESV, and this is what the author says. He says, Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, I'll get back to the end of what the cloud of witnesses means. He says, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. And so, these are two of my favorite verses. I heard a sermon on these verses when I was about 18 years old, and it changed my life. It changed my perspective of how I pursue God, and I've been trying to share it with teenagers and students ever since I heard it myself. And so I'm excited for this. And the way we're going to break this apart is I'm going to ask two questions and hope, try to attempt to provide an answer for them. And the first question is going to be, what is the best way to run the race? What is the best way to run the race? I ran college track and cross country, ran all through high school. I spent a lot of time running, and that whole entire time I had a coach teaching me how to run. And so I want you to view this author of Hebrews 12 as your coach today for how to run the race after Christ. And so that's going to be the first question. And then we're going to ask, what is my motivation for running? What's my motivation for running? Because let's be honest, most of you, I used to love running, but even now, if you said, hey, Will, let's go do a marathon, I'd be like, are you serious, man? Like, I don't want to train for a marathon. Like, I doubt anyone in here would be like, let's all sign up and go run a marathon in a couple weekends. Let's do it. No, you would be like, what's going to be in it for me? Like, what's the motivation? Like, why would I run this marathon just for fun? Like, it's going to be hard. And so that's going to be the second question, is because if our life is like a marathon running after Christ, then I think it's important for us to know the motivation for running this. So these are the two questions we're going to answer. What is the best way to run the race? And what is my motivation for running? Let's look at number one, and we'll start by reading that first verse again and then break it apart. So back to the first verse. It says, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, and here's what we're really going to talk about. Here's where the title of the message came in, which, what's a better question to ask? He says, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance a race that is set before us. So if you're asking the question, what is the best way to run the race? Well, the answer is simple. The best way to run the race is to lay aside everything. Everything. Not just sin. Look at that verse. I think something that's so important is the author, he doesn't say, just lay aside every sin. Quit, just stop sinning and you can run the race. Now, he adds something to that. He says, lay aside every weight. And when I heard this message, this is what really changed my perspective of pursuing God. Because I think most of my life, until I was about 18 or 19, I would always ask, is this sinful, right? If I was thinking about dating someone, I would say, like, is this a sin? Like, would it be wrong for me to date this person? Because if not, like, it's free game, right? Or social media. Like, is it a sin to have social media? Point me to a verse where it says social media is sinful. Like, it's not in there. So that's free game, right? Like, is it a sin to go party and do this and that and to say these words, to watch these things? Like, point me to that verse. Where is it? Like, is that a sin? And it may not be in the Bible. Like, it may not be a, quote unquote, a sin. But the author is saying that is the lowest question you can ask in life. The lowest question you can ask in life is, this a sin? Like, that is the minimum. Instead, the author, what he is saying is, don't just ask, like, is this sinful? Like, what's wrong with this? What's wrong with this? Instead, what you should be asking, like, is this going to help me run after Christ? Is this going to help me run? Is this going to bring me more joy and more life? So when you're thinking about, should I date this person? Should I watch this? Should I get this social media? Should I hang out with these people? I would challenge you and say, are they helping you run? Is it helping you run after Christ? And to give you an illustration, again, I used to run in college, and I want you to imagine, like, it's race day. Like, we have a cross-country meet coming up, right? We're about to go run a 5K, and I show up on the race to the starting line, and, you know, I grab my school bag, right? Like, I care about my grades, so I grab this. And then, you know, maybe I like clothes, so I've got my bag of clothes, and I love sports. Like, I grab a basketball and I'm forgetting my phone, you know, my phone and my money. Like, who doesn't love these things, right? And so I show up to the race and I've got all these things and I say, coach, I'm ready. I'm ready to run. What's he going to tell me? He's saying, Will, what are you doing? Like, you can't run with all this stuff. And I say, I can run. I can run with this. And he says, well, maybe you can run, but that's going to slow you down, Will. And he's like, throw those things away. You don't need them. I mean, and then I'll ask him, imagine if I asked my coach, I said, well, what's wrong with these things? Like, school's not a bad thing, is it? Money's not bad. Like, sports aren't bad. These are good things, right? Like, why can't I run with these, coach? And he would obviously tell me, like, they're going to slow you down. And so let me tell you, like, there's nothing wrong with sports. Like, I love sports. I played sports. But guess what? Sports, they are a great servant, but a terrible master. There's nothing wrong with a phone or money. But let me tell you, money is a terrible master. It's a great servant. School, same way. Relationships, same way. Everything in this world, man, it is terrible masters, but they make great servants. So I want you to ask yourself today, what in my life, like, is there anything in my life that is maybe not necessarily sinful, that, like, on the surface it doesn't seem that bad, but really it's become a master of my life? Like, social media, it is owning me, you know, like the comparison issues, they are owning me. Or my relationship, like, man, we may not be, like, it may not be a bad relationship, but is it consuming your life? Like, has it become a master of your life? One more illustration about running. If you run cross country or track, you probably have a watch that has like a GPS on it. So that way, I mean, you need a GPS watch if you're going to run, so you can know how far you're going, how fast you're running. And every day, every track practice, like me and my teammates, we start our watches before we start running. But when it came to race day, our coach would make us turn in our watches to him. He said, you're not running with a watch. And if you go, you can go test this for yourself. Go look up like an Olympic 5K. Like, go watch some professional runners and look at their wrists. You're not going to see them wearing a watch during a race. And the reason why our coach was saying, like, when you're racing, you don't need the watch. Like, you don't need the watch. It's going to distract you. You're going to be looking at it. Like, you don't need to know how fast you're going. What you need to do is run the race. Like, get to the finish line. And a watch, it's a great tool. It's a great servant. Like, I needed this for practice. But during the race, like, if it would just consume me, it would master me. And so that I would turn in my watch. I never raced with the watch. And so, when you're asking yourself, what is the best way to run this race? What's the best way for me to run this race? The best way for you to run the race is to lay aside everything. To ask yourself, what in my life could be, you know, not necessarily a bad thing, but has just consumed me and started to master me? And instead of asking, like, is it sinful? What's wrong with this? I want you to start asking is, how is this helping me run after Christ? Which brings us to point two. Is what's the motivation? Because again, like I said, if I were to ask you, let's go run a marathon or even a 5K, you'd be like, come on, Will. Like, I don't run. Like, running, it's awful. Like, it's going to hurt. And in the same way, some of you, you're hearing this message and you're thinking, like, well, why would I, like, give those things up? Like, it's going to hurt. Like, it's not that bad if I'm on, like, my phone a lot or dating this person. Like, it's going to hurt. It feels like it's just going to be a lot of loss to give these things up for the sake of Christ. So what is in it? Like, what's the motivation? What's the purpose for giving up things that may be consuming me? So I think there's two things that when you ask yourself this, that will give you motivation. I want to start by reading verse 1 again, because this will be the first point of what is my motivation for running. Look at verse 1, and it says, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. So I said we're going to come back to this. We are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. Now, you may not be familiar with the book of Hebrews, but chapter 11, the chapter before what we're reading right now, it walks you through the entire Old Testament. Every character, like Abel, Noah, Moses, Enoch, David, Joshua, like all these guys, like some that you probably don't even know their names. And what that chapter is saying, it's like by faith they were able to pursue God despite their circumstances, despite the hard time. And so when you're running the race, I want you to know that you can look to the sideline and you can see people testifying and claiming, like, it is worth it. You can do this. Like, Moses is saying. He's saying, look, it's going to be hard. There's going to be times where you're facing the Egyptian army type hard, and there's an ocean in front of you, and you feel trapped. You feel like you are against a wall. But he's saying, look, I can promise you that God is going to turn this for good. He is going to work through you for his glory. Noah's going to be like, God is going to ask you to do some crazy things. He asked me to build an ark. He asked me to build an ark, even though on dry land. And he was like, I didn't know what was going to happen, but I just had to have faith in God that what he said, when he said there's going to be a flood, I just had to have faith that that was going to be true. And so Noah's saying, God's going to ask you to do some crazy things for your life, but I want you to have faith. David, King David, he's saying, while you're running the race, he is saying, there's moments where you're going to mess up. You're going to make a mistake. You're going to fail. And you're going to feel shame. Like you're going to feel ashamed and guilt from your mistakes. And he's saying, no. David's saying, no. Like all you have to do is go ask God for forgiveness. And he will forgive you. He will. And so you have people on the sideline cheering you on from the past. You have friends and family who are running this race with you, cheering you on. You have me right now saying, this is possible. My dad, every single race my dad would show up to, which was easy in high school, like where you were just running around the DFW area. But when I got to college, we start going to like New Mexico, Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, Alabama, Tennessee, like all over the nation. And my dad, he would show up, and like we weren't super well off, like, but it was a sacrifice for him to take the time off, to spend the money, to drive and get flights. And why? Because he loved me and he wanted to cheer me on, and he was a runner himself, so he knew the pain I was going through when it's mile 3 and I'm not even close to the finish line yet, and he's saying, Will, you can do it. You know, he's cheering me on despite like everything. I want to quit. I want to slow down. I want to give up. And he's saying, you're almost there. We'll finish strong. And so what motivates you when you're running the race of Christ? The first thing that motivates you is you can look to the sideline, your left and right, and see people who have run this race before you and are cheering you on. The second thing that can motivate us when we're running after Christ is there is complete joy in this race. There is complete joy in the race when we're running after Christ. And so there will be moments, I think there will be moments where you, if you're really pursuing Christ, where you may have to give something up. I don't know what that will look like for you, but for me, there has been seasons where I have had to give up a relationship. There have been times where I have given up social media, where I have given up sports. And those things aren't bad, but there were times where I was just like, man, God, these things have become to master me, and I'm going to give it up for you. And it was hard. So there will be times where following Christ feels like a lot of loss. And when it feels that way, I want you to think of Hebrews 12:2 and read this passage, which says, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. So looking to Jesus, who, what does it say? It says, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. The cross, like, I know the cross is something we hang on the wall, but like imagine that said, who for the joy that was set before him endured the electric chair or endured death. Like that was not something that was supposed to be joyful, right? But God is saying, the author is saying, it was joy for Jesus to endure this. And so when it feels like a lot of loss, I want you to think to Jesus, who in the Garden of Gethsemane, the night he was betrayed, was praying, and I'm sure he was thinking, this is going to be the last night I will ever sleep before I die. before I'm betrayed by my friends. Maybe you've been betrayed by your friends. He was thinking, tomorrow morning, I'm going to have a crown of thorns placed on my head. I'm going to be whipped and scorned. Maybe you've gone through physical pain before. And then on top of that, he had to carry his cross, the very thing that would kill him, in front of a crowd of people, nailed to the cross, in front of a crowd of people who remind you he was probably not wearing many clothes at all. And so imagine yourself just being spit on, trash is thrown at you, and you're just sitting on that cross, the Son of God, sitting on that cross and just having the shame and suffering of that moment. Maybe you have felt shame like before in your life. And when you do feel those things, when you feel that loss and that pain, I want you to think to Jesus in that moment, who is saying it was all complete joy. Complete joy. Why? Because these present sufferings do not even compare to the future glory that awaits you. When I'm running a race, when I was running a race, like, it hurt. But I knew when I got to that finish line, when I got to that finish line, the overwhelming joy I would feel as from running a race and doing my best would be worth all the pain. So in the same way, our motivation is there is complete joy in this race. I want to close. I shared this illustration at Shoreline a few weeks ago, and I want to share it again just because I think it's powerful. And I got to share it this last week. I was at Chick-fil-A with this guy who he's a friend of mine. He's out of college, and he just started pursuing Christ a few months ago. And he told me, maybe you felt this way, he told me, he said, well, this was a little harder than I expected it to be. Like, I thought when I said yes to pursuing Christ that I would feel something, that I would feel this overwhelming joy and this, like, the presence of God, like, and everything would be fine. Like, it would just feel good. It would feel worth it. And he's like, instead, it just feels like loss. And it hurts. Like, it's harder. Like, I don't have my friends that used to have. And because I knew I needed to move on from them and start surrounding myself with godly people. He's like, I don't watch the things I used to watch because I know that it's not good for me. Like, I don't party anymore. Like, I said no to all these things, but I don't necessarily, like, it hurts. It hurts is what he was saying. And I told him, I shared with him this illustration from this author named C.S. Lewis, who wrote in a book called Mere Christianity. He said, imagine you're a house. Imagine you're a house. And God buys that house. God buys that house, right? And God goes into that house and he does all the things you would expect him to do, right? He changes the light bulbs that were out. He fixes the leaks in the plumbing. There's some creaky floorboards and he replaces those and you're like, great God, thank you for all the help. Like, that was awesome. And it's really, you know, not much pain. You knew those needed fixed, so you were ready for that. But then God starts tearing down the kitchen. He does a kitchen remodel. You're like, hold on, like, I didn't ask you to do that, God. And then he starts tearing down a wall, just ripping apart and building a new hallway, throwing up some new rooms, like building a tower, just making additions here and there. And you're like, God, what are we doing? Like, this is a big mess. It kind of hurts. Like, what are you doing? Like, we had a nice little cottage in here, and now you're just tearing this apart. What are you doing? And God looks at you and he says, I'm tearing apart your little cottage because I'm building a palace. He said, God, why are you building a palace? He says, I'm building a palace because I'm a king and I intend to live here. And it's going to hurt for a second when we're doing all these renovations and making all these changes. It may even be confusing, but it's going to be worth it. It's going to be worth it. And in the same way, God is looking at all of us and saying, I don't want you to just be content with laying aside your sin and fixing the things you knew needed fixing, like your comparison issues and your addictions and your toxic relationships. He's like, I'm not just here to save you from that. I am going to do that, but I'm going to do much, much more in your life. I'm going to change you into something that you never even thought would be possible. I'm going to live inside you, and my glory is going to shine through you. And so, when you're running this race of life, I want you to ask yourself, what's the best way to run this race? Well, the best way to run this race is laying aside everything you have. Don't just ask, what's wrong with it? Ask, does it help me run? And then when it gets hard, when the race gets hard, I want you to remind yourself of your motivation. And the motivation is you can look to the sidelines and you have people cheering you on. And not only that, the one who's cheering you on the most is Jesus Christ, who is saying, I have been there and I am there with you, and I'm going to be living inside you, and I want to be the king of your life. And so that is our greatest motivation. He says, man, I will be with you through everything. Do not fear, for I am with you, is what God is saying. And so there is complete joy in the race. And so I hope as in the next couple weeks that you ask yourselves those questions. One, is there anything in your life that is holding you back from running, whether it be a sin or a weight? And then I want you to remind yourself why it is worth it to let it all go. So let me pray. God, I thank you for this time. I thank you for these students. I thank you for D-Town, God, and Watermark. But more than anything, I thank you for you, God, and your son, that you came to die for us and that you despised the shame and you endured the cross, that you're the perfecter and founder of our faith, God. And so I pray that we will make you our king, that we will make you our Lord over our life, and nothing else in this world will compare to just the authority we give you over our lives, God. So we love you. We love you so much, and we need you. Amen.